The chapter in Ecclesiastics starts, "To all things there are a season." It can be translated in many different ways, but that's the basic idea. It's a time to be born, a time to die, a time to plant, a time to reap. It goes on and on. It also says at the end there's a time for war and there's a time for peace. It's hard to sometimes put your mind around that, especially in a time of war, or especially when you've lived a life so filled with peace. But the Bible says there's a time for everything, and we are part of everything. Some religions might say we are one with everything. But certainly there are times in our lives that are more dynamic, dramatic, challenging than the usual day-to-day affairs. Or at least it seems that way. You know, I have a lot of people who talk to me, and I will tell you, what I hear, of course, is that a lot of people go through very dramatic day-to-day experience. It is challenging in the extreme. Just personal drama, family drama, interior drama. And so when a world event happens that is really dramatic, it gets your attention. Sometimes it just amplifies your own situation. Sometimes it awakens things in your psyche, in your soul, that makes you remember you are part of a very unknowable reality, a reality that is changeable, impermanent, and every day offers an opportunity to awaken and to see more deeply into the truth of existence. Now, the mind is always, almost always, an interpreter of that existence, and it rates things according to our narrative, our story, good things, bad things, painful, joyful. We have an incredible litany of sort of awareness of story elements that feed into the system that talk about who we are. And every so often, we're impacted by what might be called the global reality. And it's like, ooh. And it's a moment of kind of awakening, in a sense. It's like, oh, yeah, we're part of something very big, very, very big. And the mind wants to reach out and put it all together and sort of make it sort of graspable, something you can be comforted in or turn away from or do something with, so that it becomes a reference point that doesn't cause you specific suffering and pain. And so we become very thoughtful. We become very much deniers. We become head in the sand beings. We become spiritual, so that we can look at life through a lens that doesn't in some ways impact us, or that makes us go, oh yeah, that's the way life is, or gives us a kind of religious tonality so that we can look at life and say, you know, this is God at work, or we can go, why God, or any of those kinds of things that happen. But in a moment of real darkness, real evil, real hostility, anyone who has a mind at all can kind of go back into the root system and the causality of all of that. And in a way, we're all guilty. In a way, we're all reactive to events. And our reactivity to events depends on the severity, the proximity, how instantaneous it is. But our reactivity is a real problem, in that it often is explosive, unmediated, arousal of these dynamic energies, which, for whatever it matters, are inside you. They are your energies. They are just your energies. And it's not like you are separate from hostility, anger, hatred, the potential to destroy and kill others for your own sense of revenge. We're all that. Every one of us is that. And until it hits you at the front door, you don't know that's who you are. And you always think that it's others. But every so often, you get a picture of yourself, which you don't always hold on to very long, that goes, ah, I am that. It's a very spiritual idea, really. But most of us want to think I am that means I am peace and light and surrender and acceptance and beauty. And you are that. You are that. We all are that. But we are also highly reactive, highly programmed beings that defend what we love, fight for what we love. And the story of mankind, excuse me, rooted back in tribal kinds of conditions and familial conditions is protect what you have, love what you have, and defend what you have against any kind of incursion. So what is incursion? It's someone wanting something you have or that you are perceived to have. How to get it is a question mark. You could sit down at a table and talk and say, look, my family is hungry. You have extra food. Is there a way we can share? If that was at the core of the human reality, we would probably be living different lives. But because people don't often sit down at the table and do that, because people are not always available to a kind of dialogue, there's a sense of, I'm going to have to take it to defend my family. I have to go in and grab the thing they have because my family won't live if I don't do that. Thus, from the beginning of time, there is war and there is peace. And there is a constant flow back and forth, and there has been from the time immemorial. And in a sense, it is biblically ordained that we are programmed for that. You know, I really found myself after years of Judeo-Christian belief systems exposed to something greater. It was my LSD trip, so you can call it an artificial awareness, but it was not in any way artificial to me. But it was a larger context in which all of this stuff plays out. It is not graspable. It is not knowable. It is something one witnesses, and in some foundational way, one senses one is that. And it encompasses all of this drama, all of this good and evil, war and peace, in a kind of witnessing zone. It's like, huh, wow. It's almost like watching somebody create a movie. You got to have drama, you got to have resolution, you got to have your first act. You know, you present the materials in your first act that are going to play out in your third act. We're prepared for, and we are born into a world of stories. But suddenly in this larger experience that I had, there were no stories. And particularly there wasn't a story called Bruce. It was really fascinating. It just was dropped into this ocean of being, of which Bruce may have been a wave, but that is all. It was oceanic. And I watched all that. And then I came back and I said, well, what was that? Why did I come back? And as you all have heard my story a few thousand times, this voice said to me, to tell people what you saw. That's why I came back. And then I said, well, what did I see? And I began the journey of looking around the world for teachings that might explain that vastness. And the closest I came were sort of Hindu Buddhist teachings, which also have turned into unbelievable storytelling. So like all religion, these great vast awarenesses have all come down to a story that we can grasp in our brain. And it's too small. When you get it in your brain, it's not it. The story has no characters. It has no plot. It is simply this vastness that, if you try to describe it, it is probably going to be the wrong description. But the closest I can ever come to that description is the first thing that arises in the vastness is something that is akin to or can be labeled as love. Love. It just arises. And it brings along with it something I call beauty, which is what it feels like, and something I call truth. These are names. They're very limited. They limit the whole thing immediately as soon as you say them. But there is something in a vastness that surrounds us that is exquisitely potent, alive, and real. And what happens in human life is that you become born into the projection of that thing. And that's called life as we know it. It has trees and skies and other people. It has earth. It has homes. It has food. It has munitions. It has hydrogen bombs. It has all of that. And we are born into that. And we live in the awareness of that kind of unbelievable changeability, suffering, pain, excitement, beauty, sexy, powerful, all that stuff. But the real problem for people is that their whole attention is in that, what I call the movie, or you can call it the dream, all in that. The great thing about the inner journey, the spiritual explosion that took place for me with LSD and then was expanded upon by my meeting Rudy, was that living in the world alone is not balanced. It's not enough. The world is full of chaos and drama and pain and suffering and joy and everything else, but it is only an expression of this other thing. And this other thing is discovered. It's in the world. It's everywhere you're looking at. But the source of it, source experience, is inward. It's in you. And if you don't find the journey inward, you are lost in this drama. And boy, oh boy, it is a real drama. It's implosive, it's explosive, it's extraordinary, it's beautiful, it's terrifying, it is everything, but it's only part of the story. The real story finds itself in the storyteller, and the core, massive, oceanic awareness and knowing that is inside each of us. And it's only when you are turned into that space through whatever grace there is in the universe that says, hey, go in. The kingdom of heaven is within. Not like it's a new statement there. You know, 2,000 years, and that's Christ talking. And there was that teaching before that. Go inside. You know, Buddha really went inside. He sat down for 6 years under a tree and said, I'm just going to go in here and look and see what's there. And what he saw, unlike LSD, which for me was a few billion years of unfolding, but in real time, 8 hours, Buddha went inside and he sat for 6 years and he found this, this vast oceanic thing that was in him. And then said, it's in all of us. But we are not all available to sitting under a tree for 6 years. Not going to happen. So we're told to practice meditation for 20 minutes a day. Sit quietly and make that your moment under the tree. Just sit quietly and feel yourself embracing this internal reality that is expressing itself in the external world. It is an extraordinary thing to do. But Buddha, I think, understood that not everybody can spend that kind of time and still have a life and have a world. What about reproduction? What about having children? What about falling in love? What about caring for the people you have, your parents, your grandparents, and the ones that are still coming into the world? You can't be in a cave and do that. But you can go 20 minutes a day, if you will, half an hour, whatever, sit inside and just find the path to, it's really interesting. It's not that far to go. It's just right here. Just take a breath. and you get maybe 10 seconds, a minute of, oh, okay, I can do this. If you sit long enough, you can get 10 minutes, 20 minutes, you can get 30 minutes of, oh. And then you look at the world through the lens of that, huh, and it looks different. You don't judge it in the same way. You have what you might call empathy, compassion, love for all of it. You understand the evil that men do. You understand the survival. You understand the reactivity to evil. You know in a way that you would be that same person given the opportunity. But you are where you are. Karma, if you will, the reality of your life has put each of us in a relatively comfortable zone compared to what happens when the world erupts in evil. Hopefully we can hold on to this for a long time, but there's no plan for that. Every one of us is going to have our own internal explosion at some point, our own drama, our own attack on our system, our body, our mind, our self. We're all going to go through that. It's a war zone ultimately for everybody, unless you can go, thy will be done. Thy will be done. And take that breath, even in the last moments of your life, and go, okay. You know, Mahatma Gandhi was about to be assassinated, and he saw the gun, and he went, Om Namah Shivaya. That means peace is the name of Shiva, the destroyer. But he went, peace first. Peace is the name of the destroyer. Each of us has an opportunity to be, if we can find it in our muscular system, able to embrace finality, totality, evil, darkness, horror, all of that by going, thy will be done. It's scary. It is scary. And let me just talk about being human, because most of us don't have a doorway in or a very deep one. Most of us are challenged when that doorway is entered, you know, because we're so lax about it or occasional about it. We don't have grounding there. Most of us are human. Find your humanity. Understand, yes, to all things there are a season. Know that. Open to the truth of your life. Open to the truth of even at the end, you may be in a state of terror and suffering and misery, unlike anything your mind can ever get itself around. And at that moment, there will be your mind trying to get around it. If you can just remember, take a breath, be human. Know that every human being on this planet has essentially gone through what is happening to every season, to every season. This is going to happen to you. It happens to us all. And you can, in a certain sense, make peace with it. You can trust it. You can allow it. You can love it. You can do whatever you can. I would just say, if you can work toward this idea of going yes to life rather than no, not me, it will change everything. This is not easy. And a spiritual journey is not a security blanket. You may feel it is. You may feel I can pull that blanket over my head and I don't have to worry about these things. Bullshit. Not going to work. Sorry, guys. It'll help you through day-to-day life. But as it gets tougher, as the pains start to demonstrate themselves more dramatically, as doctors start to tell you there's not much we can do, as all that stuff starts to go on in your life, you're going to have a very different attitude to life than you may have right now, you know, where you can, you know, watch 500,000 channels on television and forget everything else. That is not going to be the case at the end. At the end, there's nothing to watch. There's nothing to see but you and this thing. And the suffering is outside. The suffering basically is a manifestation of the material. Remember, there is an immaterial space inside you that you have access to, and the more you practice, the more you make an effort to go in, which I mean, trust me, is not once a month or twice a month. It's a daily thing. You try to go in and you feel that space. My experience over 50 years of working is that it is more accessible and more real and more viable than anything you can imagine. It is there 24/7 if you want it to be. It is a source of nourishment. It is a source of comfort. It is a source of love. It is a source of joy. And it's also a source of wisdom that to each thing there is a season. That's what it is. The inner space doesn't free you from it. It gives you a way to go, yes, or to embrace it, or to go, okay, something like that. Or my mother-in-law's great teaching. There's no greater teaching than that, trust me. What are you going to do? You know, if you can get to that in yourself, that will be beautiful. So here we are in a world of disturbance, of enormous disturbance, you know, in the war zones of Israel and Palestine, in the congressional lives that we all get to look at through the newspapers and televisions that we turn on or off. And we look at all that stuff and we go, oh. So one suggestion, something I haven't really done before, but have done this week, I turned off the news. Just turned it off. I don't really think of it as putting my head in the sand. I just go, I know. To all things there are a season, there is a time for war and there's a time for peace. I know that this goes on. Do I need to be exposed to everybody's suffering? Trust me, my empathy is exposed. My empathetic zone is so alive that I feel this world. In a way, it's a blessing and a curse of a spiritual journey, because you're no longer limited to the person. You're now exposed to the human. And you really understand in a very wise way the totality of being. Do you need to put your eyes and ears and nose into the suffering, into the blood of it all? If you want, I'm not going to try to be judgmental, but it could be more destabilizing and more disturbing than you think. And if it is that, you better do more work inside to find your stability and find your grounding, because if you don't do that, you will get yourself so wrought and overwrought that you won't be able to function in the world. That's not a good thing. It's not good for you, and it's not good for the world. And then let me bring this to conclusion by saying this. What is good for the world is you. You are good for the world. And I say that because being tuned into what's being spoken about here, being tuned into a spiritual practice, being tuned into an inner space that helps you to balance and harmonize with the outer, you represent everything that life needs. You represent the kindness. You represent the clarity. You represent the let's talk about this instead of fight and kill each other about it. You represent the light over the dark forces that have lost the idea that light even exists. You are the bearer of, you are the owner of this very light. However much of it may be there, I know you all have dramas and family issues and things that are going on, but take that into account, pull inside, take a deep breath, ask for help to surrender, to accept, to open, and allow the light to shine, and then allow the light to reach out to the others around you. You don't have to fly across the world and pick up a gun and try to fight for goodness and whatever it is your mind might tell you. You need to send light to the space that's around you, and in a way, know that that's what's being asked of you, and it's enough. Be the light to what's around you. You cannot save the world. You can send some money if you want. You know, that's not a bad thing. You can try to reach out. You can call people. You can send notes. You know, you can reach people who are in harm's way. But you are the light. Be the light. And that will help a lot in that there, to each thing there is a season, and there is day and there is night, and you can be the daytime for people. The end. So I don't know if there are questions. I mean, again, I'm probably gonna have to reach out because I have two screens. I can't see everybody. But if you do have a question, just speak. And if you have no questions, that makes things easy.
I have a question, Bruce. It's Wendy.
Oh, Wendy, hi.
Hi. Thank you for the talk. This is really beautiful and timely, of course. So, I guess just looking for a little more, because what you said about really being able to go in, the moments of the being caught up or the suffering in the material, or or being empathetic with, I can shut the news, but I'm still very much aware. I feel, in a sense, empathetically of everything going on. So could you just speak a little more about that shift to be able to redirect in and connect more really, like, to the feeling realization of the inner you're speaking about that feels that, sense of reality?
Well, again, it's not different than what I've said, and it's not it's not like you have to find a cave and go sit down in a cave for a week and figure it out. You don't have time for that. You don't. You've got your mom coming here from she's coming. You've got your issues with family. All these different things are going on, and they're very, very propulsive and demanding. You have to sit down somewhere in the morning in a quiet space and use that space to do this practice. If you don't do it, then if it's like an occasional every few minutes or every hour you take a breath, that'll help. But you may have to really, as Rudy would say, do the work. And when there's as much drama going on as I know you're exposed to, it means more work, the harder lifting. You can't just sit back and think, oh, I can power through this just day, moment by moment, take care of all the little things each one of as they arise. You're going to use up all your energy doing that because so much is arising in your life. You have got to go to the place that fuels that, that gives you the energy, that gives you the power to react really sweetly and lovingly to all of the dynamics that are going on around you. I mean, you have all these negotiations to make in your life to make a lot of people happy in very difficult circumstances. You have to be balanced in yourself. And you have to be deep in yourself in order to make that happen. And if you're feeling the strum and drang of all that stuff and feeling anxious and dramatic, you're not going to make it better. You're only going to add to the equation. Your mind will try to feel it through and figure out what can I do here and what can I do there. The mind will not get the answer. The mind is not capable of grasping the deep internal reality of our lives, which is that to each thing there is a season. And I have to find my way into the belief and the truth of that so that I can know it and not think it and not dramatize it, but live it. And living it is everything. And the only way you live it in some real profound depth is work to go inside. And again, it's not that hard. It's knock and it shall be opened unto you. Seek and ye shall find, ask and ye shall receive. Those are great statements, but they have to be done. And so many people I know don't do that. They just think, I know the answer. I got it in my head. I've done meditation for all these years, so I can just do it. No, you have to do it. You have to do it. And the only way to know if you're doing it is, do you find still pointedness, quietude, openness, love, forgiveness, clarity, all of that will come out of this space inside. That's what it does. It's an ocean of light. And if you aren't experiencing that, it's because you aren't going there. And if you're not going there, don't expect it to just come surging through, although it could, but don't expect it. You have to do your part of the equation. Okay.
Thank you, Bruce. What I heard you say is, because I meditate every morning, 30 to 45 minutes, but there's a different depth of work, I think, at the next level of not just sitting, but working at a next level.
Well, let me say just this, that it's not like you go into 35, 45 minutes of meditation and then leave it behind. The whole idea is to bring it along for the rest of the day. It's not like you just go there like you're taking a nap and you got a blanket covering you up and you feel great and then you got to go into the cold. You bring that blanket, you bring that comfort, you bring that joy with you into the rest of the day. It's going to follow you if you invite it. Let it in. Let it take over your life. Bring it to every situation. The idea of having a place to go that hides from the world is not what meditation is about. It's a place to help you ground yourself in the world and use it for that. Okay?
Thank you.
Anybody else? Again, I can't see you, so speak up. Silence is powerful. Okay. I love you guys. What do I want to say? Next week, there will be a in-person class in New York. Let me put it this way. Anyone who wants to attend the class for the other side of the country at any time, just sign in at your time. West Coast, 8 o'clock in the morning. East Coast, 11 o'clock. Just sign in. If it turns out to be too many people, it'll be a collective experience, you know, rather than it won't maybe be quite as individualized, but it doesn't matter because the collective is very potent and you will get what you need. I promise you, everybody will get what they need out of just showing up. In fact, half of the effort, half of the value of a class is the showing up. If you could figure out what that means, it means you have made your life part of a larger choice to be in this world of light and giving and learning and gathering and sharing. That's what you've chosen to be. That's a big deal. You're all here because you've chosen to be here. So next week, whoever shows up, I guess I can keep sending invitations on a weekly basis, and maybe I'll do that. I'll send it to East Coast, West Coast. But just know, even if you don't get an invitation, you're welcome here. Okay? Love you guys. Thank you for showing up. And have a great, great week.